Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In this episode today, I'm going to be talking about 20 things that can support you in your chronic fatigue recovery. This episode was inspired really by a post I did on social media. Being completely honest and transparent, I am really struggling to keep up with my social media presence at the moment. Mostly because my work days are busy with clients and I have some personal things that I'm also addressing in my personal life, which are taking a lot of space and energy. And needless to say that social media is just very low down on the priority list. So I actually stumbled across this little note that I had in my phone, which must have been something I wrote probably even a couple of years ago, which was 20 things to help you on your chronic fatigue recovery. And I just took the note, literally just copied and pasted it, made a little reel, posted it on social media, and people really liked it. So I thought maybe I can turn this into a podcast episode because, again, just being completely honest, really struggling also to keep up with the podcast, mostly because I feel like I've talked about a lot of the most important topics already. And I am interested in getting more guests on the podcast, but with my schedule being what it is, and then having to align my schedule with someone else's schedule to do an interview, it all just takes so much more time and energy. And it is easier for me just to record a solo episode where I, when I've got some time, like I do today, I can just hit record and talk. So much easier than scheduling an interview and then doing the research and preparatory questions to interview a guest speaker. So you're probably getting the sense that life is quite hectic at the moment. And it is hectic and also in good ways as well. In my body, I am feeling really strong. I've just started actually doing a little bit of running. And I had really thought that running was something that I would just never get back into. I was like, that's probably just not going to be for me anymore. Hiking, yes. Running, no. And I was away for the weekend with some friends on a spa retreat weekend. And the hotel we were at is on like a little lake and there's a circular 1 mile route around the lake. And I woke up on the Sunday morning and I just felt like I had some energy which needed to move. And I thought, I'm just going to do this 1 mile run around the lake. And I did. And it was hard. And my heart rate was ridiculously high. But I did it. And I was actually quite proud of myself that I did it because I also did that and then drove myself back from the weekend away, which even a year ago would have been a really big deal, just the drive, let alone a drive and a run and a whole weekend away. So that was a really positive thing. And then today, 4 days later, it's Thursday today, I thought, I'm going to do another run. So I went down to the beach for my morning swim, which I do a lot more so in the summer. And it's 1 kilometer to the end of the promenade and back. And I did that before my swim. And again, it was hard and my heart rate was ridiculously high, but it feels good just to add some intensity back into my routine again. You know, I think we've been through such a busy period of enrolling new clients in the business. And now things are like settling down and stabilizing. And I can feel that my body's just got a lot more energy for other things like running. I've also been painting my flat. So every evening this week, I've probably been painting between 90 minutes to 2 hours, which has been quite a fun thing to do. I'm definitely somebody who can be a little bit like a dog with a bone with tasks. So when I start something, then I just want to like push through and do it all and get it done and get it completed. So I have to be mindful of that. But I've just been doing like a door frame here, a skirting board there, and then the next day, another door frame and another skirting board, and just gradually getting it all done across the course of this week. And, you know, thinking back, I was just thinking even a year ago to be going to the gym, doing a full day of work and then painting in the evening would have been completely unheard of. I would have probably been still very cautious about when I go to the gym versus how many clients I have in a day And at least at the moment, I feel I can just do it all without even thinking about it. Just go to the gym, do my work, do the painting, go for a run. So it's really nice to feel like there's more choice coming back into life. It's obviously taken a really long time to get here. You know, I really started to feel the effects of fatigue in my body from the beginning of 2019, which is now 5.5 years ago. But even before then, I was still kind of what I call circling the drain with my health. So from 2019 up until now, 5.5 years, it's taken that huge chunk of time. So if you're listening to this and just thinking, oh, yes, but I'd love to be where you are, but I'm just not, also know that it can take time. And so what I'm going to do in this episode is just kind of go through these 20 different things, things that I've probably spoken about in many different ways on the podcast already. So I'm not going to go into depth with every single thing, but you can kind of think of these 20 things as like a checklist, or this is an opportunity for you to check in on yourself and just notice like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten that I should probably be thinking about that. Or, oh, that's something I haven't explored yet. Or I know I should be doing that, but I'm actually not doing it. So think of this episode as an opportunity just to check in, to take a moment to evaluate where you are, take a moment to think about what you need to do or not be doing, and just maybe just a little bit of a recap, a refresher, a reminder of some principles that could potentially be supportive for you wherever you are in your journey right now. And before I go into the episode, just to say, if you haven't left a review, please take a few moments of your time now to leave me one. The best thing you can do is either on Spotify or iTunes, just leave me 5 stars. I think iTunes lets you write a little paragraph. So if you'd like to do a written review, that would be great. But just taking 20 seconds of your time to leave 5 stars would be really, really beneficial to me and to other people who need to find the podcast, because your reviews help to improve the podcast ratings and it makes it more findable for people who are looking for this information and haven't found it yet. So thank you so much for doing that. And then also just to say, there's leaf blowers and hedge cutters and lawn mowers and all sorts of things going on outside. This is a no-frills podcast, so I don't get overly obsessive about, you know, the quality of the sound. I just sit down and record when I can in my office, and the best I can do is close the windows. So there might be a little bit of noise in the background, and if that's disruptive for you, I really do apologize. But there's nothing I can do about it today. So let's go into the episode. Okay, so 20 things that could be supportive for you on your fatigue recovery journey. Well, the first thing I have at the very top of my list is keep a diary of activities and meals and notice what things make you feel better, worse, or the same. And so here, what this is really about is growing our awareness. When we first enter into this fatigue recovery, health journey, energy crisis experience, we're often very unaware of what we're doing and how what we're doing is impacting our body. And so there needs to be some way we can start to increase our awareness, start to become more aware of the things that we can't see. And there will be things that you are doing in your day that are making you feel worse, whether that is some sort of mental load or physical load or emotional load. And there may also be foods or the macronutrient composition of meals that could potentially be disruptive for blood sugar, which are also making you feel worse. So what I do with my clients, I don't necessarily do this with every client, but if I'm working with someone and I get the sense that they're just a bit disconnected from their habits and how their habits are impacting them, I might get them to just fill out a spreadsheet or a table where they just write the time, they write the activity that they did, and they score their energy on a scale of 1 to 10. And they just do that for every single thing they do throughout the day. That also helps me to get a sense of their routine and what they're doing, but also start to look for patterns. Oh, I could see that you actually kept yourself busy doing these different things for 3 hours. And then look here, your energy had dropped much lower. What if we were to break those 3 hours up with a little bit of rest in between? Would that maybe be helpful? Oh, you can see like every time you eat lunch and there's potato that your energy levels have dropped afterwards. So maybe we want to look at the carbohydrate balance in your meals and start to think about blood sugar. So it can be really helpful to track and measure things. There is a saying, what isn't measured cannot be managed. But on the flip side of that, I also work with a lot of clients who are so sick of measuring and tracking everything, which I get as well. So we kind of want to find this balance of doing some periods of measuring and monitoring, create some changes, give ourselves some space for those changes to take hold, and then maybe go through another cycle of measuring and tracking. What I do find, though, is that when people are measuring things, they're more accountable. When they're keeping track of things, they're more consistent. Because I also do see that a lot of people, when they stop measuring and they stop tracking things, they kind of go into a little bit of a space of denial about what's really happening with their diet or what's really happening with their pacing. And sometimes we have to go through these cycles of repeating again and again and again and again until the new habits are really embedded. So in terms of something that you could take away from that first point is, do you need to go through a phase of monitoring yourself again just to see if what you're doing is actually what you think you're doing, or if there are any blind spots, anything that's contributing to feeling unwell or not making the progress that you want to make? The next piece is just a little bit of a piggyback off of that, which is integrate restorative practices into your day to help recharge after more taxing activities. So I use that example of, oh, you've been doing this for 3 hours. Maybe you could break those 3 hours up with some little restorative practices in between. This is essentially pacing. So a lot of people might think that pacing is you do a lot, and then when you feel tired, you stop, and then you rest for the rest of the day. But actually what we want to do is break the day up with periods of activity within capacity and periods of rest. So when I was in my own journey, and I was working, running my own business at the time, I would sit at my desk for an hour, and then I would go lie down for an hour. And then when I felt the energy coming back into my body, I would sit at my desk for an hour, and then I would go lie down for an hour, or I'd go watch a TV program, or I would put my legs up the wall, or I'd do some restorative yoga, or I'd take a nap, or, you know, there's obviously multiple different things that we can do to restore us during the day. But what we're looking for is not big chunks of activity and big chunks of rest, because that's the equivalent of boom and bust in a 24-hour cycle, but rather a little bit of activity, a little bit of rest, a little bit of activity, a little bit of rest. So there's this up and down gentle flow throughout the day. And so ask yourself if this is something that you're doing, or you're constantly pushing a little bit further than what you should, and then needing a lot more time to rest afterwards. Again, piggybacking off of that, point number 3 is write a list of what is helping your recovery, the things you are doing or committing to that are getting in the way. So this is something I did on my own journey. You can literally just take a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle. At the top of the first column, you can write, what is helping my recovery? And on the other column, you can write, what am I doing or committing to that's getting in the way? And there will be things. There will be things that you know you should be doing that you're not doing, or things that you're doing that you know you shouldn't be doing. And so what we really want to do is start to really connect with how we are already supporting ourselves and celebrate that, celebrate all the incredible work that you're already doing on yourself, because this really takes work. And then on the flip side, also acknowledge maybe how you could be supporting yourself better. maybe where you're getting in your own way, maybe where you're kind of blocking yourself or self-sabotaging yourself. And then it might be hard to tackle that whole other column all in one go. But maybe then just ask yourself, if you're in capacity for change right now, what is one thing I can start doing differently? Maybe it is breaking up those big chunks of activity and doing some legs up the wall for 20 minutes once a day. So what is one small thing that feels manageable that you can change that would hopefully have an impact on how you feel on a daily basis? And I feel like all of these are probably going to start piggybacking off of each other. So I'll move on to number four, which is connect with your body and learn to identify when you are activated, settled, or shut down. The reason why this is important, if we think about point number three, which is about writing this list, in order to know what's supportive for us and in order to know what's not supportive for us, we have to be able to feel ourselves. We have to be able to connect with the body so that we can notice. And we might be able to notice the really big things because those really big things are going to come with much more intense sensations. But the magic is being able to notice the more subtle signs. And this is something I talk to my clients about a lot when it comes to pacing, is can you identify the earliest moment when you notice you're pushing through? So if you were to identify the most subtle sign that your body was getting tired and you were to stop at that point, instead of waiting until your body is really screaming at you to stop, how would that make your experience of your recovery different on a daily basis? And so being able to connect to ourselves, noticing when we're activated, settled, and shut down is important, but also learning how to notice the earliest cues, the earliest feedback, the smallest niggles, so that we're really refining how we are attending to our needs. Because I think I've said this on podcast before, and I'll probably say it again, is healing is about attunement. Healing is about us being able to attune to ourselves and meet our needs at the earliest possible convenience, instead of doing what a lot of us have probably done for a very long time, which is suppressing and ignoring our needs until we get to the point where we are just completely overworked, we've pushed too far, and then we're overstimulated, overactivated, or just completely shut down. And so that then piggybacks into number five, which is cultivate a toolbox for better nervous system regulation so that your dominant nervous system state is a healing state. And I've done a separate episode on all the different ways that you can support your nervous system, so feel free to listen to that. I think that episode, at least of the time of recording this, is episode 92, although sometimes we do move things around as it comes to publication dates. So if it's not 92, it will be in the ballpark of 92. But that episode goes through all the different ways we can support our nervous system. So that's something worth looking into. If you know you need to cultivate more connection with your body, if you know you need more tools to identify if you're activated, settled, or shut down. And of course, I've got my Nurturing Resilience self-paced program, which you can always take. And you can find out more about that on my website. So all of those things, one through to five, have been much more about, I guess, looking at like pacing to a certain extent, pacing and the nervous system, our ability to connect to ourselves, which supports then our ability to pace and support our nervous system. Moving on to number six now, these are a lot more physical, and you'll find that I have a lot more episodes on the podcast where I talk about these areas in more detail. But number six is address underlying digestive issues. And here I will say there are very few clients that come to work with myself or one of the team members that do not need to work on their digestive issues. Even people who say, oh, I don't have any digestive issues, when we've done testing, there have been identifiable imbalances. So just because you don't have any digestive symptoms, don't necessarily dismiss that there isn't digestive work that you need to do. And for the most part, when people work on their digestive health, they start to feel a lot better. So this is something worth considering or circling back to if you're thinking about what you could do further to support your health. The next thing is address blood sugar. This is something that I talk about all the time, sing from the rooftops about, because I do believe it is so fundamentally important. When we're working with chronic illness, we're working with unstable systems. And therefore, the first thing I like to do with any client is stabilize them. And we stabilize them through many different ways, but one of those ways is through achieving blood sugar stability. So whether you're somebody whose blood sugar swings from high to then very low, or it just stays high all the time, you may need to work on your blood sugar stability. And there's multiple different resources already on the podcast and my blog about this, but the best thing you can do is get yourself a continuous glucose monitor, put it on your arm, track your glucose, and you just want to make sure that your glucose levels are staying below 6 on a daily basis, but also not crashing too low, and then adjust your diet accordingly. The next thing is create a sleep routine. And sleep is another one of the stabilizing factors because of the way that our circadian rhythms influence our health, our mood, our immune system, our neurotransmitters, and everything else in between. And so we want a routine where someone is going to bed at the same time each evening, give or take half an hour, and they're waking at the same time each day, give or take half an hour. And ideally, that also includes some morning light on the eyes within the first hour of waking. And even if you can't sleep, I know that sleep issues can be particularly challenging for people, to still have a routine around it. So you're still unwinding in the evening, you're going to bed at the same time. Once you get up in the morning, you have that light exposure. And even if the moments in between are not ideal, or you're having difficulty falling asleep or waking in the night or broken sleep, still see if you can keep the rhythm, keep the routine. And then obviously, if you need a little bit more of a top up, you can have naps in the day as needed. Especially people with brain injuries can need a lot of additional sleep and naps in the day just to cope. So we want to allow for naps as long as they feel supportive for the overall picture. Then the next thing number 9, is address breathing and support red blood cells. So when clients come to work with us, one of the first things we want to see is a full blood count, because the full blood count can tell us if there's any oxygenation issues, i.e. anemia, iron deficiency, B12 deficiency, folate, or in some cases, we're seeing a lot of people with B6 at the moment. And not breathing properly, having unhealthy red blood cells, which can't carry that oxygen to your cells, that's a huge issue when it comes to the ability to make energy. We make energy in the presence of oxygen. So if we're not getting oxygen into the body properly because there's breathing issues, for example, sleep apnea, or there's issues with the lungs like asthma, or maybe there's issues with the red blood cells due to nutritional deficiencies, those are all roadblocks to energy production. And this is low-hanging fruit. This is clinical priority. If someone is coming in and they have these things going on, we need them to address them as soon as possible to really create the best possible foundation for optimizing energy, because oxygen is just so important for health. The next thing on that list is number 10, which is identify and eliminate infections. This could be parasitic infections. This, I would say, could also just be an overgrowth of bacteria in the gut, like dysbiosis, for example. It could be mold infections, so mold colonization or candida, yeast, fungal overgrowth. In some cases, it could be Lyme. We don't work with a lot of people with Lyme, but we do work with some. And those infections are draining energy from the energy bucket, and they are going to keep the body in a state of distress. We know when we have an acute infection like the flu, we feel terrible. We have low energy. We have a foggy brain. Our muscles ache. Or we get breathless just walking up a flight of stairs. So we know that when the immune system is working at fighting something, it's very, very draining on our energy and just how we feel day to day. And that can be the case for ongoing chronic infections that haven't been dealt with yet, whether that's just a little bit of dysbiosis in the gut or something more significant that's going on. So as part of our, I guess, workup towards thinking about what we need to do to support our recovery, we want to work out what's going on here and, you know, what needs to be addressed. And I would say, I've already mentioned digestive health. A lot of people have got bacterial imbalances in their gut. A lot of people have got yeast overgrowth and mold. Not everyone, but it's really worth considering those and addressing those as part of your fatigue recovery strategy if you haven't already. Then in addition to addressing infections, we also want to think about number 11, supporting detoxification pathways. So we reduce the toxic load, whether that is we want to practice toxin avoidance, so avoiding or limiting our exposure to toxins, whether that's from food, water, the beauty care products we're using on our skin, the fragrances we're using in our home, our cleaning products, scented candles, diffusers, trips to the hairdresser, et cetera, all of these experiences are increasing our toxic load. And a normal, healthy human can be exposed to all these chemicals and may not really even notice a difference. But somebody whose health is already compromised may really, really feel the impact of these chemicals on their system. And in addition to this, these toxins are potentially wearing down the mitochondria. So we know we need to have healthy mitochondria to make energy. And what we're essentially doing is just trying to remove as many threats as possible, whether those threats are coming from infections or the threats are coming from toxins or the threats are coming from foods that we're reacting to, or the threats are more of this just overstimulation because our nervous system is in overdrive. Whatever the threat may be, we really want to take away as many of those threats as possible. And then see like how the body responds to the reduction of those threats and if there's an opportunity to heal and restore and then recover. So I'm going to jump around with some of these just so I can put them together and keep the physical pieces together. So the next one, number 12, is you can use functional medicine testing to identify metabolic roadblocks and address nutrient deficiencies. So you make energy in your body in a series of biochemical reactions. We need to take carbohydrates, fats, and proteins, and we need to metabolize these through a series of biochemical steps so that we can make energy. And these steps require enzymes, which means we need adequate protein. And they also have nutritional cofactors, whether that's vitamins or minerals or a combination of both. Now, if you have digestive issues, if you're eating a very limited diet, if you have malabsorption, if your food quality is poor, all of these things can contribute to nutritional deficiencies. Taking medications can contribute to nutritional deficiencies. If you have a leaky gut, that could contribute to nutritional deficiencies. And so sometimes these nutritional deficiencies can be roadblocks to the ability to make energy. So a test I really like to recommend for my clients is the NutriVal, which is a nutritional evaluation, as the name suggests, where we can look at the need for vitamins and minerals and also fatty acids and really make sure that the body is getting what it needs to support itself. So that's something else you could consider from a more physical standpoint. And then the other thing we could consider, number 13, would be supporting inflammation through diet and lifestyle. So we've already looked at this idea of reducing the inflammatory load by dealing with infections. But what else could we do to be supportive of inflammation in the body? Can we change the diet? Can we reduce the sugar, the processed foods, the blood sugar spikes? In some cases, for example, things like grains or dairy or seed oils could maybe be inflammatory, or fried foods or foods which are blackened and burnt could increase oxidative stress. So how could we maybe change our diet to really reduce the inflammatory load on the body? A lot of my clients, we're often talking about a paleo diet or a paleo-ish diet. So we're really just focusing on, you know, good quality fats, good quality animal protein, vegetables, fruits, if tolerated, nuts and seeds, if tolerated. And that is the center of the diet, maybe with a little bit of grains, maybe with a little bit of dairy, maybe with a little bit of legumes, if tolerated, but not always. So those are the physical pieces. What I'd like to then do is just talk about the next one, which I think is number 14, which is starting to think a little bit more about like mindset and beliefs. And so number 14 is work at your pace. You can only move as fast as the slowest part. And this is where comparison can be the thief of joy, because it can be so frustrating when you feel like progress is slow. It can be so frustrating when you compare yourself to others. And when we are in this place of this urgency to heal and the frustration that it's not happening fast enough, that destabilizes us because it takes us out of our healing state. And something that I had to work at again and again and again and again in my own journey was dropping back into the present moment. And just when I was noticing that sense of frustration, when I was noticing that sense of urgency, to drop back in and be like, I'm here now. What do I need now in this moment? Do I need to be pushing ahead, or do I need to drop back into myself and just be more gentle, more kind, more loving? And for the most part, it was the latter and not the former. So make sure you're working at your pace. Number 15, laugh, joke, express gratitude, and cultivate joy by doing what you love. This was another big thing that helped me shift in my own journey. Sometimes we can get so railroaded into the fatigue recovery strategy. It's the supplements, it's the diet, it's the meditations, it's the sleep routine, it's all the physical things that I just spoke about, which yes, are important. But when we feel that all life is about is the healing routine, we've missed the trick. Because we also need ways to just be ourselves, be an individual independent of healing, just be who we are, connect with the things that light us up, laugh, joke, be grateful for what you have, not for what you don't have, and find ways to cultivate joy. You know, in my own journey, what I discovered, which I kind of probably knew already, so it wasn't like a life-changing discovery, was it was just so important for me to get into the ocean. And granted, by that point in time, I did have the capacity where I could either walk or drive myself a short way to the beach and I could just get in the sea. And then I could sit on the beach and feel the sun. And that was just what made life worth living each day, was the moments of getting out into nature and just enjoying being in the ocean, not necessarily having to swim or be very physical, but just feeling my body in the water. My cats are just like another really great one. Just if you know you need to rest, resting with a cat is just so much more joyful. You know, when you have this lovely little furry, warm body that you can co-regulate up against, and they're just so cute and comforting. And you know, when you have to rest, resting with a cat is just, it feels so much better. So I'd say those two things, just the time in nature and having the cats to rest with, were two things that really brought me a lot of joy in my journey. And then, you know, because I love learning, the ability to read, and, you know, even though I maybe couldn't read chapter upon chapter upon chapter, but I could read, and I could listen to podcasts, and I could continue to learn. Those things were also things that gave my life more meaning when I was, you know, stuck in the four walls of my bedroom resting. So the next one is number 16, which is work on limiting beliefs, shadow integration, and connect to a vision of the future. So I guess that's actually probably three things in one point. So I won't spend too much time on them, but you know, we do all have beliefs that hold us back. And it might be these beliefs hold us back. They stop us from setting boundaries. They stop us from meeting our needs. They keep us in people-pleasing tendencies. And that can also be linked with our shadow parts as well. The parts that we maybe, if we put our needs first and we don't people-please, then maybe we will be perceived as selfish and we don't want to be perceived as selfish. So we stay stuck in these patterns. And so it's really important that we gain insight into how our mind is playing tricks on us and keeping us stuck. And then perhaps once we're more aware of some of these patterns, connecting to a vision of the future. What does life look like now that you're well? And for some people, that can be like really overwhelming. It can be a really big jump. In my own journey, I did the DNRS, Dynamic Neural Retraining System. I believe it is with Annie Hopper. And part of that is just a visualization process of creating a vision of the future. And my visions were probably just, you know, quite modest. It was just being able to go for a walk and feeling the sand underneath my feet and feeling the cool water on the tops of my feet and just visualizing a sense of peace and ease in my body. So it doesn't have to be an overwhelming vision of the future. It could even just be, what would life be like if it was 10% better than what it is now? You know, you could go for that 5-minute walk around the block, or you could finally get out of bed and make yourself your own meal, or whatever it might be. And how would it feel in your body if that was a possibility for you? So the most important thing when we're doing these visualizations is, yes, to have the visualization, but also to notice how the body connects with that visualization and the signals that we get as a consequence. Kind of piggybacking off of that, number 17 was connect to what matters and say no to what doesn't and set clear boundaries. I think that one is kind of self-explanatory, but I think we can often lose sight of what's important. I think chronic illness really at times can really help us to connect, reconnect with what's important when we've lost sight of what matters historically. But sometimes when we're so in the journey and we're navigating all the different aspects of health and routines and supplements and pacing and all of that, we can sometimes disconnect from what it means to really be alive. And we want to stay connected to our purpose, why we're here, where our aliveness is, and then set the appropriate boundaries so we can protect some of that. So we're not putting all our energy into healing, and then whatever's left, we put into other people and we forget just to enjoy ourselves and enjoy life. Number 18 is ask for help and surround yourself with supportive people. I will hold my hands up and say, I'm absolutely rubbish at asking for help, and I'm getting better. I'm definitely getting better. It's really important that we are able to ask for help. And sometimes we don't want to. Sometimes asking for help feels vulnerable. Sometimes asking for help is complicated based on who and the logistics and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we need to be able to ask and we need to be able to receive. And we really want the people that we surround ourselves with to be the right people so that we can feel supportive, so that we can feel cared for. And I still remember in my own journey, I think for the most part, I didn't really communicate to the people in my life how much I was being impacted. And it led to a buildup of a lot of resentment because I just felt so unsupported. And I can still feel there's a lot of emotion around that as I think of it now, because I really felt in my journey, like, I'm so grateful that I was such a strong person and I knew how to support myself, because there was a big gaping hole in terms of the support that I received from other people. But I do remember I had one friend who messaged me and she was like, let me know if I can do some, you know, anything for you. I could do a grocery shop for you or bring you some food. And at the time, this was a very long time ago, I just said, no, no, it's fine. You don't have to do that. And even though I couldn't receive the support, I still have a memory of that being offered. And I've always held that friend in such high regard because she took the care to at least offer. Even though I denied it and I couldn't accept it or receive it, I've always just thought that was actually such a kind thing to do. And obviously that part of my journey is completely over now. I can't change what happened. But if you're still in this journey and you can ask for help and you can receive the support that's being offered to you, then my invitation is really just to allow yourself to receive it and accept it. So number 19 is get professional advice when you need it. So there will be a lot of things that you can work out on your own through listening to this podcast, through social media, through reading books, through your own gut instinct and intuition. And then there are times when paying someone for some advice could really take a lot of time and energy off of your journey. Obviously, this is my profession, so I'm very mindful of, say, you know, I guess I'm mindful of my own bias. But, you know, like I know, like if I want to get my car fixed, I'm going to take it to the garage because I have absolutely no idea about cars. And yes, I could look on YouTube and learn a few things, but, you know, ultimately my car gets me from A to B, it gets me to the gym, it gets me to the supermarket, it gets me to socialize with friends. It's a very important part of my life. And if anything goes wrong with it, I just want that dealt with as soon as possible by somebody who knows what they're doing, whatever the cost. I'm not going to start YouTubing mechanics. And your body is a very important part of your life. And if you can put your body in capable hands, because there is obviously, there's a lot of incapable hands out there as well, which is the unfortunate truth. But if you can put your body in capable hands, it can really make a big difference in terms of the progress that you can make, or even just shortening the timeline. On the flip side of that, the opposite is also true, in that we also sometimes need to trust ourselves. And this comes back to that connection with the body piece. I was having a conversation with a client about this earlier this week, and I said to her, I'm not in your body. I don't know what your experience is. I can guess. I can tell you what I'm sensing. I can make some educated decisions. But at the end of the day, you are the only one in your body, and you are the best person to be able to take care of yourself. And so it's really important that if we are seeking professional advice, that it's a collaboration, that it's a collaborative effort. You're not handing full responsibility over to the practitioner and just being a puppet in the game of healing, but you're also, you know, volunteering your input, and you're collaborating and you're communicating. And you also don't want a practitioner who's like my way or the highway. You want somebody who can be open to listening to you and collaborating with you and taking feedback and also getting it wrong sometimes, and things will be trial and error and you have to work it out and problem solve together. And then the final point is just a number 20 is find a way to move your body that is appropriate for you. This can be such a controversial topic when it comes to chronic illness, chronic fatigue specifically, but we do need to move. We need to move in some way, shape, or form, whether that's a few isometric exercises in bed, a few gentle stretches, a walk around the block, or something more. Now, moving our body is how we connect to our life force. And I think I said in one of the previous episodes, like life is always moving. And if you were to just connect with where life is moving in your life right now, where would that be? And how could you move with it, even if just a little bit? Whether that's some shaking in bed, or just some wiggling or jiggling, or something more structured. And so have a think about where you are engaging with the movement of life and how you can move with it. So those are my 20 things. I hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode. I hope it's offered a little bit of an opportunity to reflect, to acknowledge maybe what you are already doing well, maybe to consider some things you could look into or some blind spots. And whatever you've got from today, I hope that you can take something small away. And I will see you in the next episode.